Today, Ed interviews Scott Simmons, an insurance consultant for buyers and lawyers. Scott talks about common mistakes that lawyers make when buying both general business and professional liability insurance. He also provides some key clues on how to improve not only your purchasing power, but also your coverage. Scott was a general agent for 20 years and has consulted with buyers for the last 7. While he works out of Maine, his consulting is national in scope. Listen now for ideas on how to reduce your overhead and increase your protection.
Scott, thanks for joining us today. I look forward to our discussion about a topic that most lawyers spend too little time on, and that's insurance.
Ed, glad to be here.
Let's start with you and your background. If I understand it correctly, for a number of years, you sold insurance, all kinds of insurance, and then for the last number of years, 7 or thereabouts, you've been an insurance consultant. Is that right?
That's exactly right. For 20 years or so, I sold insurance as an independent insurance agency, working around the country with a wide variety of clients. About 10 years ago, I started thinking about the insurance transaction and how it all works, and I figured that there ought to be somebody with insurance expertise sitting on the insurance buyer's side of the table. So I set up a consulting firm 7 years ago. I don't accept fees or commissions from insurance companies. I don't sell insurance and approach things just from the side of the table of the insurance buyer.
And one of the groups that you work with is lawyers, and I want to ask you, from your experience working with lawyers, what are some of the common mistakes that attorneys make when they set up their insurance programs, perhaps irrespective of the nature of the insurance itself?
Well, we can divide really an attorney's coverage up into a couple of different sections. The first part is the property insurance, and I see a fair number of errors just in the amount of property insurance that attorneys buy, and it isn't just attorneys. Most businesses underestimate the replacement cost of the property that they have in their office or the value of a building that they own. So the amount of coverage that folks are buying on their stuff, and that's the easiest way to describe property.
Well, one of the questions I would have from your comment is your reference to replacement, because most of the insurance that I'm familiar with is not based on replacement cost, but rather depreciable cost, which is a whole different world.
Absolutely, and that would be one of the major errors that I see. Most insurance policies now should be written on a replacement cost basis. So you're getting what it's going to cost to replace the item that was destroyed in a fire. And you're absolutely right. There's a big difference between replacement cost and a depreciated value. Computer equipment, think of even desk chairs and office furniture. The moment you unpack them, they're worth a whole lot less. And certainly a 4-year-old desk set is worth a whole lot less than a brand new desk.
Are insurance policies written today with replacement value as the base criterion?
They can and should be. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we talk about not being covered enough. In other words, lawyers are not thinking in terms of replacement and therefore don't have enough on the coverage base. What about the deductible? Is that something that lawyers normally work with okay? I know in my own experience I try to get the deductible as low as possible so I don't have to put any additional money out of my pocket.
Yeah, I actually look at it exactly in the opposite way. I like a nice high deductible or a relatively high deductible, because there are a certain amount of events just are a part of business, and I don't want to involve the insurance company in relatively small claims. So I like to see deductibles in the $2,500, $5,000, $10,000 range as a minimum. Insurance companies have become more aggressive in looking at loss records as they go through the pricing and underwriting phase of a policy. So turning in a lot of little claims is actually going to hurt your long-term insurability and also your long-term premiums.
One of the questions then that I'm wondering whether the insurance carrier would ask on a renewal application or even a new original application is, what's been your loss experience? if you take care of, as you call them, the minor losses, do you still have to let the insurance carrier know that they occurred, that they exist, when you make the application?
In most cases, and again, we're talking about property insurance. It's different on the professional liability side and on the liability side. In most cases, when you apply to a new insurance company for a bid or for new coverage, they're going to ask you to see some documentation of your past losses. They're going to ask for a loss run from your prior insurance company if you had insurance. And that generally is all the documentation they need.
That would be a loss run, though, from the insurance carrier.
That's right.
And not from you.
That's
so, in other words, if you've taken care of four or five, so let's say $3,000 claims or losses, when your deductible is $5,000, you don't have to disclose that. So that's not going to impact your premium. Is that what you're saying?
The question is asked, what claims have you turned into your insurance company?
Aha. Uh-huh.
They're not looking for the small stuff. Obviously, if the question is asked, have you ever had damage to any of your property, and you have, you need to answer the question. But in general, they're looking for what is an insurance company paid out on your account.
Okay. And you do or do not get brownie points for having taken care of losses on your own?
You get brownie points for no losses showing up on an insurance company loss run.
Okay.
And again, this is property insurance. The professional liability side is very different. Any claim that you have, any inkling of a claim, you need to go through the appropriate process and report those, even if they're groundless, even if they're, you know, it turns out you can settle it for $3,000.
Right.
Those all need to be put out there. What we're talking about is property insurance.
Okay.
Damage to your property.
Let's turn for the moment to professional liability insurance, or sometimes called malpractice insurance, and as long as you mention it, and, you know, talk about the kinds of insurance that may be available for a lawyer, either a sole practitioner or a small firm, because I think the large firms are covering themselves in most cases. But
there's a variety of programs out there, both for large firms and for smaller firms. You're right, large firms have captive opportunities that they can work with and large programs. The smaller firms have programs through state associations in many cases that are available to them. I've been able to work with agents around the country that specialize in attorneys within their own state or in a couple of states. So there's association plans. There's these specialized agents who often belong to the Bar Association as an associate member. So your local association can be a great source of information. There is a variety of coverage issues that are out there as well. Not all professional or malpractice policies are equal. In fact, they're all different.
Right. Well, before we get to the differences, let me ask you, when you describe the various types of organizations and the like that offer malpractice insurance, whether it be by a state bar or a direct sign-up between the lawyer and insurance carrier, what's the marketplace today? Economically speaking, are we looking at a buyer's market or a seller's market?
The overall insurance marketplace now is a buyer's market. There may be individual areas within insurance and states where lawyers' professional liability insurance is tough to buy. There might be some practice categories or classifications that have particular tough issues, but in general, there's more competition in the marketplace now than has been around for the last 10 years, 15 years. There's more insurance companies hunting for business. There's a lot of capital in the insurance marketplace right now, and that capital is seeking risk. So insurance companies are looking for business. And this is the time to be out in the marketplace looking for what coverage and price deals you can set up.
Is there a general benchmark that you can give us on a national basis that an individual lawyer might expect to look for? In other words, are we talking about $2,000 a year or $7,000 a year or some other benchmark that a general practitioner might look to understand what the cost might be for him or her?
Segregate your question into a couple of different categories. if a law firm has not been out to bid on their insurance over the last 3 or 4 years, and they're not going out to bid right now, they can expect to either see their premiums stay flat or decrease slightly. Now, this is assuming that they haven't had a lot of losses.
Right.
If all of a sudden last year was a terrible year and you had a lot of losses, you're going to pay more for your insurance next year because of that. But all things being equal, if you don't go out to bid, your premium's going to stay the same or perhaps decrease by 5%. If you haven't been out to bid in a couple of years and you're going out to bid this year, you can look for a reduction in your premium of between 15 and 25%. The marketplace is very competitive, but it's only competitive if you make it competitive by threatening your current agent and your current insurance relationships with the loss of your business.
Well, let me ask you how the major losses to the insurance industry, such as Katrina and tsunami and, you know, you name it, that have been in the public press so much over the last 12 to 24 months, how these events have impacted the marketplace for lawyers.
We've seen some regionalized issues on property insurance. Operations, and this isn't just lawyers, any operation that has a seacoast exposure, a wind exposure to the seacoast, a couple of years ago saw their premiums jump. There are certain parts of the country where the regulators have stepped in and put some mandates on insurance companies, and we've seen some shortages in certain areas, again, the Gulf Coast. We've seen that in New England. We've seen it on Cape Cod, for example, where insurance companies have pulled back. That's been all on the property side of the business, though, not on the liability side. The liability side continues virtually everywhere around the country to be extremely aggressive.
So they're not looking to the professional liability arena to make them whole on the property or casualty side?
That's not what I've seen.
Okay, because I thought, from what I heard on the street, that the rates were becoming more firm and they were going up as a result of the losses in other areas.
It's going to sound like I'm picking on insurance agents, but that's a great way to explain a rate increase to a client.
Okay.
I think that it's based in fact, though.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the specifics then vis-a-vis the professional liability insurance world. You said earlier that there are no standard policies. Every
right.
policy may be different. Talk to me a little bit about the difference between occurrence policies and claims made policies. Are there any occurrence policies left anymore?
Not for lawyers that I've seen. There may be one out there. I just haven't seen it in probably 10 years now. So it's by and large gone to the claims made side.
Okay, and that means that the law firm has to be very alert to report even a suspected claim just in order to get their foot in the door, correct?
Well, as long as you stay with the same insurance company year after year after year, the claims made policy really doesn't impact the claims reporting issue. When you really run into trouble or potential problems is when you change from insurance company A to insurance company B on a claims made policy. That's where you have to be particularly diligent. The claims made policy, as does the occurrence policy, both have reporting requirements, as does your automobile insurance or your homeowner's insurance. You have to report claims in a timely manner. So that really isn't an issue with unique to claims made, though it can be an issue if you either cancel the coverage, an attorney retires or is disabled, or they go out into the marketplace, find a better quote, and change insurance companies. That's the biggest time of risk.
What are some of the coverages within the liability arena that lawyers need to be particularly concerned about? In other words, what must they make sure is covered in the policy that the carrier might exclude but for the diligence and the review from the lawyer?
The first place to start in the policy is the definition of professional services. How does the policy define the activities that you perform that are going to be covered? in that description, you're going to find the intent of the policy. If the description defines legal work narrowly, there could be a problem, for example, if you're doing strategic consulting or working with the municipality on a lobbying issue, something that's moving away from the typical contract, courtroom type legal work. But the definition within the policy is going to be pretty specific. The other issue to focus on is how much coverage do you have, and how is that coverage used? So, for example, in one policy, we might have $2 million worth of insurance, but that $2 million includes the defense costs, defending yourself against an allegation of malpractice. Another policy would again be $2 million, but the defense cost is outside of the limit. So as you pay an attorney to defend you in the second policy, you're not using up that $2 million of coverage. And obviously that's a distinct difference between two policies that on their face appear both to be $2 million worth of protection.
And that's something that the lawyer has to look at very carefully. It's not something they should rely on any broker or any perception on their part. They ought to look at the language itself.
The broker or advisor can certainly provide you with information on that, and can provide some guidance as to how to overcome that. In many parts of the country, $2 million is adequate protection if you're not worried about the cost of defense within.
Okay. And what are some of the common mistakes that lawyers make in buying this kind of insurance?
Relying too strongly on one provider of information. There are state-sponsored, state association-sponsored programs that many attorneys are buying because it has the blessing of the Bar Association. Well, I've seen some problems with the definition. Again, as I mentioned, the definition of the profession that's covered, or the definition of the services that are covered by the policy. Having competitive brokers look at the policy that you have and offering suggestions, or to plug myself, use a consultant to review the coverage that you've got there. But having more than one set of eyes looking at it is a great strategy.
One other question I want to ask you on the area of professional liability insurance pertains to rules of professional conduct. And I know a number of states have a rule, and California is working on the development of a rule, which parenthetically I oppose, but I'm not sure I'll have success in preventing it from occurring. And that is that the bar, either through the rule of professional conduct and or a rule from the Supreme Court of the state, is requiring lawyers to disclose to clients that they do not have malpractice insurance coverage. In other words, if they in earlier days, if you had coverage, you had to tell a client. Okay. And if you didn't have coverage, you had to tell a client. In today's rule, they're talking about disclosing to the client only if you don't have insurance coverage, that is malpractice insurance coverage. What's been your experience, if any, with the impact of this rule on lawyers?
I haven't seen any specific impact of that in any state. We've gone from a place 50 years ago when few attorneys had this coverage to an environment where it's virtually assumed that everybody's got it. And so I haven't seen any direct response in the marketplace to either disclosure of coverage or disclosure that you don't have coverage.
Okay. Let's turn from malpractice insurance then to another area that's kind of hot in today's world. I think it's not quite so hot today as it was just a few years ago when big cases were on the horizon and major law firms were slapped with big numbers, and that's the employment practices liability insurance,
yeah,
or insurance to protect you from suits by employees for a whole host of things like sexual harassment and others. What has been your experience in this area, and how important is it for lawyers in today's world?
Well, two sides to that. First of all, the insurance environment for employment practices liability insurance has changed dramatically in the last 15 years. Insurance companies have become much more comfortable with the coverage. There are more players in the marketplace, and so premiums have dropped substantially from where they were 10, 15 years ago.
Is it true that it's almost a crime not to have such insurance because
the premium
is so low?
Yeah, I got to say that if you've got more than five employees, it probably, and you're going to be in business for more than 10 years, it probably isn't a matter of if somebody's going to sue you. It's just a matter of when, or when are you going to get yourself into hot water. The states, most states, are fairly liberal in what they allow an employee to bring action against an employer, and attorneys certainly are subject to that. The premiums are quite reasonable now. The coverage is, in general, quite broad, though there are still some policy differences between insurers. In many cases, the attorneys are buying directors and officers insurance as protection against issues of partners coming after other partners or issues like that, and you can fold employment practices coverage right into your directors and officers liability insurance. So it's a pretty straightforward policy now, and relatively easy to find.
And again, you have the issue of defense costs, correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, so that should be a separate element in the policy.
Well, for the same issues that we raised when we were talking about malpractice insurance, there are some insurers that keep defense costs inside the limit of liability, and there are others that keep it outside the limit of liability. So it's a part of the decision in how much coverage you buy and which policy you buy.
Well, there's another policy that I think is really important, and I want to focus our attention on in the time remaining to us, and that's the what I call business interruption insurance.
Yep.
If you have a fire or disaster of any kind, you, for some period of time, may be out of business, or your flow of revenue may be interrupted, which I guess is how I come to call it business interruption insurance.
Right.
I'm not sure that's a term that's still used in the insurance industry.
Well, it absolutely is. I mean, think of the upheaval that was experienced by law firms in New Orleans and what those folks had to do to get back into business. And you know, many of them moved to Houston and moved out of town or took up operations in other parts of the state or of the country, and think of the expenses involved in that.
There's two elements I want to address here.
Yep.
One is the flow of the revenue, and the other is the increased expenses. But the third element I want to address, and perhaps we can do that first, is what happens when the lawyer just doesn't get started up again? In New Orleans, as you mentioned, there are a number of lawyers who just moved out of the area altogether. I mean, everything that they had was lost.
Right.
And there was just no way for them to start up again. And insurance or no insurance, the carriers were not Johnny on the spot saying, here's, you know, $200,000, go start your practice again. They wanted to make sure the claims were processed properly and the whole like, and by which time the lawyer no longer has clients to serve.
Right.
So and how do we address each of these three issues?
Well, anytime there's a loss, there are responsibilities of the policyholder. And on the business interruption side of a property loss, the responsibility of the insurance buyer is to do those things that bring them back into business as quickly as is reasonably possible. And that's the standard that's within the policy. I interpret that to mean act like you don't have insurance. Do the things that you would do if you didn't have insurance to get you back into business quickly and to resume operations. If you don't resume operations, it's up to the adjuster to work with you to go through the process of trying to figure out, you know, what is a reasonable period of time or what would have been a reasonable period of time had you wanted to get back into business, what could have been done.
Okay, let me play hardball for just a minute.
Sure.
I'm a lawyer. I'm involved in a Katrina-type disaster, and I want to get started. You're telling me to act as though I don't have insurance, and I now start looking for new premises, and the landlord says, I'm happy to rent you my new premises for, you know, I'm blessed, my building didn't go down, and I have some extra space I can rent to you. I need first and last month's rent. And I, the lawyer, say, you know, the bank's out of business. Until they get their record straight, I can't even write a check for you. I don't have cash.
You're going to act like you don't have insurance. And perhaps it's a bad use of the phrase, but what I'm trying to portray is if you had office space, you know, B office space, don't expect the insurance company to pay for A office space in the interim. If you have the opportunity to rent adequate office space, you know, for pick a number, $2,000 a month, or for $4,000 a month, don't just take the $4,000 a month because you want to stick it to the insurance company.
Okay.
You have to use a reasonable. There has to be a reasonableness to the transaction, or you're going to be subject to extra scrutiny by the insurance company of what you do.
One of the things that I think is important, at least from my own experience, and perhaps you can comment on this, is that the relationship between you, the insured, and an insurance broker is critical, because that insurance broker will be your advocate or not with the insurance company.
I've always said that the most important part of the insurance transaction is an insurance buyer's relationship with their insurance agent. That relationship has to be a trusting relationship and a comfortable relationship, just like the relationship between an attorney and their client. If there isn't a trust that exists, there isn't a belief in the professionalism of the individual that you're working with, that's just not going to happen. So I'm agreeing with you completely.
Well, the other part of that is that the insurance agent understands the attitude of the insurance company and can guide you as to what would be acceptable and what will not be.
Well, they should be in the fight with you. They should be in there working with you to facilitate and to remove barriers to the resolution of a claim.
Okay, so let's go back then and talk about the two aspects of this policy, at least as I understand it. One is the loss of income, and the other is the extra expense that will be incurred as a result of making the move in order to adjust to the disaster.
Right. So your office building is burned to the ground. You've got two things that are going on. First of all, you're losing income. You've got expenses that continue, and you don't have the contribution to profit. So that's that first part that you mentioned to the policy, to business interruption coverage. It's going to pay continuing expenses. So if you've got salaries of key people, it's going to pay interest on loans. It's going to pay for insurance costs that continue for you. It's also going to pay your lost profit that would have been realized in that time of business that you're not in business. For most law firms, as with most office environments, that should be a relatively short period of time. An attorney's building burns to the ground, they're going to be able to find, hopefully, within an area, again, assuming a fire and not a Katrina type of incident, they're going to be able to find office space someplace else locally that they can lease on a temporary basis while their building is being rebuilt. The idea is that an attorney would be able to find lease space someplace fairly close, and that's going to be more expensive than occupying their existing building, and that's where extra expense comes in. It's going to pay your increased costs of getting back into business quickly. It's going to pay higher rents. It's going to pay to make the office workable. You might have to put carpeting in, repaint the temporary office. You may have to run extra power lines. Internet service might need to be provided to that location, or change the the configuration so that your people can now work in this environment for 6 months or 3 months or 12 months, whatever it takes to get your original location back up and running. So that's the extra expense coverage. It's going to pay those higher costs of both operation as well as the cost of getting you back into business quickly.
Tell me how long these policies normally run for. I mean, I know that you're buying a policy a year at a time, but does the coverage provide for payment to you for a limited period of time, or are we talking about, say, a five-year window here where because you're moving, you're now increasing your costs, and those costs are going to be with you, those increased costs are going to be with you for, say, 3, 4, 5 years?
Yeah, I don't see them being with you for 3, 4, 5 years. Your building should be rebuilt within a year or so. In most cases, you know, folks are back in their original office within a couple of months. It's one of the issues that's come out of Katrina, for example, is that many policies have a 12-month limitation to business interruption coverage. I like to extend that to 18 months. In most cases, that's more than adequate. Again, the operation is going to be back up and running, assuming you've taken aggressive action to get yourself back into business. The insurance company is not going to be your real estate agent, your leasing agent. It's up to you to get out there and get yourself back into business, get your building rebuilt, or find a new location.
So what you're saying is that most of the policies would cover a 12-month time frame, but you can negotiate for something longer.
Yeah, I think 18 is much more of a reasonable number. Even in an office building burns, you're going to go through the zoning process in many cities, zoning, planning board, things like that. You may have trouble finding a contractor right away.
Right.
So I like 18 months a whole lot better than 12.
Okay. Well, Scott, I want to thank you for joining us today. Your insights are valuable for those of us who really prefer not to look at the negative possibilities, but if we plan for them, then we can not only address the disaster before it happens, but also recover from it very quickly. And that's in line with my new book, Disaster Preparedness and Recovery Planning for Law Firms. So I want to thank you again for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. I hope I gave some insight. There are also articles on my website that some of your listeners might be interested in. ScottSimmons.com, SimmonsDS.com. I think I'm up to 250 articles now that are accessible on that site.
Terrific. Thank you again.
Take care. Thank you.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.